Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Paul.
And we're going to challenge you to transform your financial future through the principles of the most profitable business in the world, banking.
We believe everyone should be involved in two businesses, the business that you're in and the banking business. Everyday people can replicate what bankers have been doing for centuries to leverage capital and build wealth through private lending.
Join us as we uncover the truths about money, expose lies and myths, and flip conventional financial advice on its head. Here we go.
All right, we're back. How's it going?
Good.
Good, Paul.
What's up, Dave?
Not much, man. Actually, we got baseball season starting tonight. So,
Oh, wow.
Blake's first game is this evening. And it's a little windy, maybe a little rainy, but it's on. The boys of summer are here.
Just it's amazing how far our seasons are. Like, we're, what are we, seven games in now? I think tonight's his seventh game.
Yeah, well, Minnesota starts late. That's why they go to school here until like the first week of June, because it's not even warm outside in June sometimes. And the lake certainly isn't warm enough to swim in. So they just have they end school later. So like the first week of June, they go the full week, and then they don't start school until after Labor Day.
After Labor Day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember, when I was in school, we were starting middle of August. It was like still the dead of summer and you're starting school again.
Yeah. We started, after Labor Day where I grew up actually.
But maybe Kansas took education more serious. So
than Massachusetts.
I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah. Oh, well, but, man, things are good. So we had some pretty funny comments from the last episode, huh?
We did. Even some text messages about it, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just some people just like friends saying, guys, I was dying listening to that episode.
I was laughing re-listening to it because you told me. We're like, we didn't edit that part out. So I went back and listened. It was pretty funny. It was worth it's keeping funny. In there.
And it really wasn't as bad as I originally thought. In fact, if I hadn't laughed, it was funny. So
yeah, people may not have noticed. So we had some comments on the YouTube videos from that one, from the last episode, which is Infinite Banking Playing Hardball with IBC Haters, episode, I believe, 115. So one of our esteemed clients says, David Waller here. I'm not an agent, but I sure pump whole life insurance just about every day. My favorite thing is to comment on Dave Ramsey posts about term and just watch people go nuts. That's funny. It's like winding,
that is good.
Like little wind-up toys, and you just let them go. They'd all just run into each other and go crazy.
The lower middle class Americans unite against you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, everybody needs a battle insurance. Fight. What's that?
For some reason. They hate whole life insurance for some reason.
They really hate it. They call us whole lifeians, like we're Scientologists or something. Might as well be, I guess, according to Mr. Ramsey.
We don't have that much money.
No.
You have to be uber rich to be a Scientologist, I think.
You do. Either that you become like a slave and they abuse you and put you to work for free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God bless you.
My brother lives in LA and he actually walked into one of those Scientology buildings just to be like, hey, tell me more. And just sat through their little spiel just for fun. Said it was pretty eye-opening.
Pretty interesting.
Yeah.
All right. What else we got?
And what does JJ say?
Oh, man.
Which
one is? Oh, there it is. Yeah, he said, I'd like to pump up this episode because you guys really brought the easy-to-understand concepts today.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for pumping the episode up. Appreciate that. And that's what we try to do. Just make it easy to understand. If it's not, let us know. We'll simplify it even more. And then we got food, peace, and self-care. It's kind of a long comment, but basically promoting whole life big time. It talks about, hey, I must have explained the concept to 100 people and none of them catch on. So what would you say to that, Paul?
Yeah. I would say this. One, definitely appreciate that. But send them our way. Send them to the podcast. Find out what their problem is. Everyone's got problems, right? Unless you have so much money that, you know, if you have so much money, you don't have a problem, right? So find out what their problem is. Find out what appeals to them. Is it college financing? Is it financing vehicles? Is it their business? Is it whatever it is? We have an episode or episodes covering something. How to get your spouse on board with IBC. Don't take that burden on yourself, because it's a lot to kind of explain to people. So find people like you that like the infinite banking concept, are practicing it. You're looking for people just like you. Something about the infinite banking concept appealed to you originally when you first started. What is that? And find out there's other people like you that it will also appeal to.
True.
But the masses aren't going to get it. You know, they're just not. This is a very niche thing in a very relative small group of people, Americans and Canadians, practicing it.
Right. I mean, if you think of the population of America, what percentage do you think are actual true free thinkers and critical thinkers? Because I think it takes a critical thinker to really, you know, put all of their preconceived notions to the side and dive into this with an open mind. I'd say maybe 10% of the population is not afraid to think or explore something new, and maybe 5% it actually thinks very critically.
Yeah, it's people need to humble themselves. People have to be, you know, I remember when I first started out in the business, you know, I was like, getting people to read anything nowadays. I was talking to somebody about that today, can be challenging. Oh, you need me to read a book? I can't just watch like a 38-second TikTok video. Or it's like, well, no. You know, this is something worth exploring. This is something worth knowing. This is something worth understanding in detail. And that's going to take time. And think about your craft, whatever you're in. To become an airline pilot, for example, or a military pilot, there's a tremendous amount of study. You're studying not only for academics and, you know, you have systems, emergency procedures, check rides, instrument check rides. You know, I mean, and it's constant. You don't just, all right, I'm a pilot now. Now I can just coast along. The continuing education and honing of that craft is constant, right?
Yeah.
Same thing with this.
Yeah. And for those of you afraid to read or need to ease into the whole reading thing, let's take a break to hear a word from our sponsors. Well, I've got two books on Amazon right now, actually, that you guys can dive into. The first, Infinite Banking for Real Estate Investors. And the second,
beautiful Infinite cover too.
Yeah, Infinite Banking for Dummies. I mean, pilots. So I actually showed this to a client today. And I said, she's like, you know, it was a husband and wife. The wife was like, we need like an Infinite Banking for Dummies. And the husband's a pilot. And I said, well, I have it. It's called Infinite Banking for Pilots right here. It's small. It'll take you probably 15 to 20 minutes to read. So that being said, I'm going to pump those books on Amazon right now. You can get them on Amazon at like 10 bucks. I'm not trying to make money on Amazon. What I'm trying to do is give people an intro into what this is all about. Enough to kind of give you the taste to encourage you to read a 92-page book, which, you know, this takes 15 minutes. That book will probably take 3 hours.
Yep.
So no big deal. Well worth your time. And at least at that point, you'll have enough information to either say this is for me or completely disregard it and say, hey, I've researched it, not for me. So there you go. But if you get these books and contact me, just let me know that you heard about this on the podcast first. All right. Well, so speaking of books, let's get to some comments. So today's going to be a Q&A session. We've dug up some questions from the YouTube channel, which I guess is the only place people can leave questions or comments, right?
Yeah, sometimes we'll get email questions as well, just direct.
Yeah.
But these are all plucked from, from YouTube.
Yeah. So we get the haters, the occasional hater, because frankly, they're definitely not listening to the episodes. They're just reading titles and hating on it.
There's actually a small war going on back and forth.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. He came back.
Oh, good. Good.
Yeah.
Well, maybe some of our other listeners can jump in and answer some questions.
Yep. I was just liking comments and stuff yesterday as I was looking at it last night. All right.
That's awesome.
Yep.
Yep. So we've got some good clients, good people out there.
Rise above, because that dude's being rude. So just rise above, be polite. You get more with honey than you do with vinegar. You get more with facts. I mean, he doesn't, let's face it, folks, and appreciate, I think it was Paul and a couple others, like, this guy doesn't know anything. And, you know, if you've got the time to comment, that's great. But, you know, don't waste your time. We're never going to convince that dude that IBC is great.
No, we're not trying to.
And we're not trying to. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I usually stay off of those threads, because I have a hard time not being, not really taking some jabs. It's kind of how I grew up on. I have fun doing that, but it's not the best way to go about it. So I just avoid it altogether. I'll let other people do it. But anyway, so we're going to go through some Q&A here. We got Mark says, good morning, gentlemen. I was wondering what book you would recommend to read about this industry. I want to learn more about this industry. Thank you. Well, Mark, I would say maybe you haven't listened to the episode yet, because I don't think there's probably an episode that we haven't mentioned Becoming Your Own Banker by R. Nelson Nash. Obviously, the foremost authority on the subject and the best book you could possibly read to get a really solid understanding.
Yeah, and I would just add that there's a huge gap of knowledge between IBC practicing life insurance agents in America and just your typical old life insurance agent. Most life insurance agents, and even people at the home office, and I love you to death, they don't know what they have. They don't know how to strategically use the whole life insurance product the way that we are and the way we teach our clients to. So yeah, I completely agree with Dave. You know, I don't go searching for like life insurance industry books, but as far as the infinite banking concept, obviously Nelson's works are what you need to be looking at.
Right.
Without question.
But if you want a better understanding of the banking industry in total, because let's face it, IBC is about the process of banking.
That's right.
It's not just about whole life insurance. That's the product. The process of banking is the most important piece to this to really understand. Read How Privatized Banking Really Works. Mm-hmm. Great book that'll explain to you what fractional reserve banking is. And we have an episode on it early on. You could search for that one to give you a Cliff Notes version of that. But that's a good book. Great read. Written by an Austrian economist PhD.
Correct.
Right.
An American Austrian economist.
American Austrian economist. Did you see the latest some UFC fighter was quoting Mises?
I did see it.
That was awesome.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, I know. You know, he's not just a punching bag. He's done some research. He understands Austrian economics and private property.
I mean,
and the importance.
What a way
of all
to that. Plug your, you know, he's quoting and telling people to read Mises, like, you know, just
yeah.
Wow, it was awesome.
Probably not many in the crowd that have ever heard that name before, but
no,
definitely more in that crowd than at a Taylor Swift concert that have heard that name. So
no. No question.
But everybody should be reading up just a little bit about Austrian economics. All right, let's move on. So Trevor asks, in the scenario with your lawnmower epiphany client, how would you set up a repayment structure to pay the loan back for the escrow payments? He says, do you pay it off before the next escrow payment, take longer because you can? So let's talk the lawnmower epiphany. We have a client who was out mowing the lawn one day. Maybe he was listening to a podcast, but sometimes like you get these great epiphanies while you're doing something other than being at work. you're in the shower, you're doing yard work, you're playing sports or something, and something hits you. Well, in his case, he realized, man, I am giving the bank all this money from the properties that I own, the taxes and insurance money. I'm sending it to the bank and letting them hold it for 6 months at a time before they pay that bill. Why don't I just do that myself and capture those funds as premium in a policy? Which is what he started doing. And now every 6 months, he just takes a loan and writes a check. And then now, what does he have? I mean, the way I see those, Paul, and you and I were talking before we hit record, like loans should not be feared.
No,
like policy, this is not policy loans, right? We don't need to fear them like we do bank loans, credit card bills, loans, right? That's basically a loan. You know, the old Sears layaway account, that loan. Like, you don't need to fear these things.
You put it on layaway? Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's right.
So, because too often we're taught to fear debt, to fear these loans. But in the case of a policy loan, what is there to fear? It's now you just have a hole in the ground that you get to fill with new dirt as it comes into your possession. Now you just capture that new cash that comes in and throw it in that hole, fill it back up when you can, however long that takes.
Yes.
Right? I mean, you and I have had loans out for, I've had six figures of loans out over multiple policies for a couple of years before I was able to pay them all back.
Yep. Yeah, it's complete autonomy, complete control over the function of banking. And, you know, with this particular, you know, Trevor, with this particular question, you know, the easy answer is the banker, right? You, because you're the banker, you're the borrower, you're the loan officer, all wrapped into one thing. You could do whatever you want. You manage it. And there's no really right or wrong way. And I'll leave you with this. Loans should be paid back.
Correct.
Right? Loans should be paid back, right? That is money we're putting back into our system. It's kind of like putting money back into your savings account is a kind of a way to look at a policy loan repayment. So, I would not sweat the details of the amortization. You're going to create the amortization schedule. You're going to decide how much and when and how often. And but broadly speaking, I would say loans should not be taken. If you wouldn't take a loan from a bank that's not that you don't own, you shouldn't be taking loans necessarily from your policy, generally.
Yeah, even though it's much more advantageous for your overall financial picture to take a loan against your policy cash value than it is to go to a bank for a loan. Because like Paul said, you control the terms. I've never lost sleep a single night of my life because of an outstanding policy loan. I just don't
even think about it.
I don't even care.
I know they're there.
And I know I'm eventually going to pay it back.
That's right. I'm either going to die, pay some interest, or repay the loans.
Yeah, I'll repay the loans. And where is that loan repayment going to come from in the future? And this will go to a couple of these follow-on questions. Maybe we'll just come back to this point. Like, are you going to be stuck at the same income level right now for the rest of your life? My guess is that you're going to get an income increase, or at least a cash flow increase over the next several years. That could come from a rise in your income, your salary. Maybe you sell something, you sell a house and cash in on all that. Maybe you pay off a debt. Maybe you have credit card debt or a car loan, you pay that off. And now there's $500 a month that was going towards that can now go towards repaying a loan. Like money is going to, should, if you're doing things right, increase as you get older, not decrease or stay stagnant.
Yes. Right?
That's a perfect time to repay loans when that money comes in. Now you've got it earmarked already before you go spending it. Like, I got to put it here. This is where it's going.
Yep. Maybe the seven children that live in your house all graduate college and they're on their own in the real world. You get them off the payroll. That's probably a pretty good windfall too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, out of high school, they're off the payroll. I mean, I don't plan to fund college for all of them.
That's right.
That's for sure. But you know, once they're out of the house, that's a pay raise.
Dave's going to surrender them all to the world of men right after high school.
Yeah. I'm kicking them out the dough. No, I'll
Yeah, you could stay, but you got to pay rent.
Yeah, you got to pay.
Cash flow for you. You could pay premium with that.
You could. Actually, you just give me your rent and I'll start a new policy and fund it.
That's right.
Yeah. I'll capture that money somewhere else. So yeah, I think everybody has something in their life in the future in the next 5 to 10 years where you're going to get an increase in income or you're going to reduce your expenses because a bill is going to be paid off or kids done with braces. There's $150 bucks a month that you don't have to pay.
Right. Yep.
So
there's always money. There's money to be found.
Right. There is. Good. All right. And we'll keep hitting. Some of these questions are fairly similar. So Trevor also asked, he expands on that question saying, or for the tithing, because we had an episode where we talked about this a couple times, but we have a specific episode on capturing your tithe, your charitable giving in as policy premium before you ever give it away, give that money away, right? You could give that money away, but never lose the opportunity to earn interest on it for the rest of your life. That's me is being a better steward of what I've been given. Is I'm going to use that, capture it as premium and cash value, and then take a loan against it to give it away. You can give your thoughts on that, and then I'll tell you how I guess design my policy.
No, I was going to just add, so you can talk about that, but I was just going to add, you know, I think the Laura Murphy report, you can still find those articles out there where I think there's one, two, or maybe even three articles on this topic. Maybe only there's just one, but there's an article. If you just Google search, infinite banking and tithing or something like that, it'll pop up. Yeah. But anyway. There's material out there to read about how you can do it. There's several ways you could do it, but Dave's going to explain how he did it on, in the real world.
Yeah. I mean, going back to what Paul and I try to do it with everything is keep it simple. I don't complicate it. I don't spreadsheet this all out. I think when I created this policy a few years back, what I did is I said, hey, I'm going to pay X dollars this year in charitable giving, tithe. I'm going to give away that much. So I would like to capture at least some of that in a as policy premium first and let it run through that system before I give it away, because then I'm also building another asset called death benefit that's going to grow until the day I die. And I could even make that policy itself. I'll make the beneficiary my favorite charity, church, multiple different charities,
yes,
whatever. Or into a trust fund or an endowment fund or whatever that perpetually funds a charity or an organization or a missionary, something, right? So it's like the gift that keeps on giving even after I'm gone. So what I did, I said, hey, let's just say the number's 20,000. Let's say I was going to give away 20,000. I created a policy with a $10,000 premium. And then I took extra cash I had available and added more on top of that as a lump sum to increase my liquidity.
As paid up edition premium.
Paid up edition premium. It's still premium, but it creates more cash value right away, more liquidity. At the end of the year, I could take a loan against that and give that money away. And then the next year, now instead of saving that charity money in a savings account, I'm now funding it with premium. It's now premium dollars. So 50% of it is funding the premium. The other 50% is repaying the loan. So just filling it back up. So by the end of the year, I can take out 100% of what I need, go give it away, and just do the same thing the next year. Now, I'm not saying it's going to work perfectly smoothly from year one. It may take a couple years to build that up to the point that, okay, now I definitely have what I need in cash value at the end of every year or every quarter or every 6 months, however you want to do it, whatever suits your personal convictions, to make that happen. And then it's a savings account. I'm storing it, saving it back up to do it again the next year.
Yep. Yeah. And Trevor, you don't have to like compartmentalize, this is a system of policies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dave created this policy for this specific purpose, but I guarantee you that the policy is going to be utilized for other things as well as needed, because, you know, the future is unknown. And again, a system of policies is able to, you know, this one is less liquid than his older policies. So maybe there's, you know, a need to take from over there. So just remember, it's a system of policies. This is just something that he wanted to dedicate a specific amount of premium and dollars towards every single year for a specific purpose. And it's great. So
yeah, you're exactly right. Now I don't take a loan from that policy to do my giving. I could take a loan from any one of the 13 policies I own my giving. All right. Which is what I do. I don't compartmentalize any of those. Like, this one's for that, that one's for that. Like, there, it's one pool of capital. It's all my money. It doesn't matter where it comes from. It just matters where it's going, you know, what I'm using it for, and that I actually do what I'm supposed to do with that money.
That's right.
So, yeah. All right. So don't be afraid to capitalize. That's one of those things. Let's see. All right. We covered some of that. Here's one from Matt. So Matt says, it seems like the easiest way to keep expanding my banking system is with convertible term on my whole life. So I'll let you take that one.
Yeah. What I think he means is having a whole life policy, you know, from a, you know, a mutual life insurance company, and then with a bunch of extra term. They all, most of the policies designed for IBC are going to have some sort of term, whether it's level term or blended PUA rider or whatever. We prefer the ones we use are level term generally, but then adding a bunch of, I guess, term on top of what's needed so the policy is not considered a MEC. And then as time goes by, converting some of that term into new whole life policies as his income increases, so he can expand his system of policies. Matt, you could do it that way. And there's probably people with varying opinions on whether you should do that or not. Something to think about is that the term on that particular policy could be kind of a drag, because there's a cost to it, depending on your age and your health and whatever, that's taking away from the cash value growth of that particular policy. You know, is it better to have a separate convertible term policy on the side outside of that whole life policy completely? That's personally how I am, you know, guaranteeing the ability to expand my system, is, and Dave is as well. We have separate convertible term policies on the side that we can convert with a snap of a finger into a newly designed whole life policy. So I don't know if there's a right or wrong way, Dave, or if you have any opinions on this subject, but that's a way you could do it, Matt, is the way you outlined it, or you could do it the way that we're doing it. I kind of like to keep my whole life policies as efficient as I can, and then I have my separate convertible term. Again, that's just the way I see it. Have I done the math and run the numbers? And nope, I'm not going to. I don't care that much.
Yeah,
splitting, you're probably splitting hairs over, you know. So, anyway,
yeah. I agree. I am definitely a fan of capturing as much of your human life value as possible.
Yep.
Like as early as possible. And most people can't do that in their first policy. Maybe you can qualify for $5 million of life insurance, but you certainly don't have enough premium to fund, you know, enough premium to get to $5 million in death benefit on your very first IBC style policy. So how you make that up is, yeah, you create that. We create that as efficiently as we would want to make it. You know, taking into account a lot of different variables, but we would design that thing appropriately. And then whatever death benefit, maybe that kicks out $1 million of death benefit. Well, you got $4 million left.
Right.
Let's capture that in a convertible term policy, so that whenever you're ready to start a new branch of your family bank, all you got to do is call us up and say, I've got, you know, $25,000 of premium I can start funding with another policy. We say, okay, we design the policy, take whatever of that $4 million that's necessary, move it over to that, and you're going. No underwriting whatsoever. So, I agree, Matt, having something in, because if you don't have that plan to expand your system, you may not have the ability to do so should you become uninsurable, right? And you don't have any other insurable interests, like wife, kids, husband, whatever. So, as much of that as you can capture right away, do it. And if you get through underwriting and you qualify for a couple million bucks, but then you realize, I just don't have the liquidity right now and the cash flow to fund a policy with significant premium, if you do nothing else, put that convertible term policy in place. So you set yourself up for success as soon as you're ready to.
Yep.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So, all right. Let's see. So we had somehow that question got deleted. The one, I don't know where that question went. We have the answer to the question, but not the question. We have,
right.
See that? Yeah. But yeah, we got one here from Matt, maybe the same Matt, but he says, could I structure a 10% base, 90% PUA policy, but the term rider insurance is convertible term, so I could expand my banking system gradually while retaining a large cash value early on. So again, Paul, I think you have some thoughts on this.
I do. So a 10 to the base, 90 to the PUA policy is, I'm not a fan of it. I think it's a weak design, and there's varying opinions on that, but I generally think I'm on the right side of this argument for several different reasons. So Matt, you could do that. Probably not with us, but you could do something like that. And I know, Matt, I think we talked on other comments that you're not committed to that. This is just an intellectual exercise. So we'll treat it as such. Is that, that kind of like we talked about with the efficiency of the policy. Yeah, that policy would be very efficient for cash value, but it's going to stall out a few years in because you're so close to the MEC line that, how much PUA and how long you could pay a PUA premium is directly correlated to how much base premium you're paying on that policy. So the higher percentage of base premium you're paying, the longer the duration of that PUA rider. Okay. And again, I can't speak to every type of policy design that every company has, but the company that we work for, that is generally going to be true. The less base you have, the more fragile that policy. And over the longer duration, remember, one of Nelson's rules is think long range. Don't be afraid to capitalize. If you need so much liquidity that early, are you thinking long range?
Right.
No. You're not, right? And later in the policy's life, when the PUA rider goes away, your base premium is all you have left. And base premium later is everything in a policy. I don't care what anyone says. My policies have significant base. In fact,
when you're getting a 5 or 6 or 7x return, as far as you pay a dollar and you get $5, $6, or $7 of cash value later on in your policy, do you want to have the room to pay $10,000 in premium or $50,000 in premium?
Or a hundred.
Like, I want to be able to pay as much premium as possible for as long as possible.
Right. Yeah. I guess, generally speaking, you're just kind of constricting, you're putting artificial constraints on a policy over the medium and long term to have instant liquidity or very early liquidity. And I think that's just my opinion. I think that's just wrong. And it's not how I design my personal policies for myself. I don't have any policies that look like that.
Nope.
And it's just, and as you expand your system of policies too, and you have multiple, like Dave's got 11 or 13 policies, I've got 7, soon to be 8, the liquidity becomes less important than long-term ability to pay premium over a long period of time. So anyway, that's just my thoughts, but yes. Could you do that? Yes. Should you do that? I don't know. Probably not.
Yeah. We don't think so. Yeah. So, but yeah, back to expanding your system, having that Convertible term is a guarantee that you can expand your system when you're ready. That's right. So lock it in.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, good, man. I think we have, we probably have another couple questions we could get through, but we're probably at the time where we should stop, and we'll do a second episode before too long on more questions. So in the meantime, everybody send your questions in, put them on YouTube, email them to us, whatever they are. We'll put them in the document so we keep track of them, and we'll cover them on a future episode. We'll probably do more of these Q&As as we go, as more questions start piling up. We don't want them to pile up for too long. So we'll plan to do more of these in the future. So send them in. Let's talk about them. All right. Well, that's all I got. You got anything else, Paul?
I don't have any parting shots today. I think I said enough last week.
I think so. I think we would all agree. Yeah. No. Yeah. Well, awesome. Everybody have a great week. Thanks for listening. And until next time, control your capital.
Or somebody else will.
Hey, thanks for listening, everybody. If you'd like to have a conversation with us to see how you can become your own banker, or if you have any questions or topics you'd like us to tackle in a future episode, please send us an email to davidandpaul@theibcguys.com.
And subscribe and leave us a review if you're on Apple. Follow and leave us a 5-star review if you're on Spotify. And please share this with your friends. We'll see you next week.